What's good? Welcome back to the Pop Off Podcast, a conversation show about sports, movies, and music. I'm your host, Ralph Compiano, and I'm joined by Bordy B, Nick Bordenaro. It's just like old times, Bordy, just me and you chopping it up. We saw each other earlier. This podcast is definitely brought to you by Bordenaro's Pizzeria. Easily the best pizza in Des Moines. Just absolutely flawless. Probably my favorite pizza in the Midwest to this day. So thank you for that.
How much of that pizza did you end up taking down?
So
full large pizza. I gifted Viv because he's my favorite person in the world. Pepperoni. How many slices did you house?
It's 8 slices is a whole pizza, right? And this is definitely a large pizza.
Six.
It's
big slices.
Okay.
Yep. So.
Yeah. So I ate 4 then. Yeah. And I housed them. And it's just the best pizza, like literally ever.
I feel very
bad for anybody that hasn't had it. If you haven't, please go to Bordenaro's and support them, because it's just, I mean, they don't need your support, but you're missing out if you haven't. But today's conversation isn't just about pizza. We are talking about Shane Gillis and his appearance on Saturday Night Live the other night. And we can kind of preview Sydney Sweeney on Saturday Night Live as well. Justin Fields to the Falcons. Not done yet, but the rumors are hot. We're going to talk LeBron just a little bit. His 21 points in the fourth quarter against the Clippers and that huge comeback. We'll talk about Wembanyama a little bit as well, another number one pick, just like Bron. And then this is Dune Day. It is Dune Day for all who celebrate.
D-Day.
Dune Part 2 is officially in theaters when you are hearing this. My review will be up on Instagram when you're hearing this, so go check that out. I'm beyond excited for that. But I want to start with Shane, because this is a guy who we've been watching him for. I'm not sure what your experience is with him, but I know that I've been on him for probably 3 years now, which feels a little bit ahead of some people. I'm definitely not one of like the earliest adopters of him, but I felt like I introduced him to a lot of people. Hato sent me his YouTube stand-up, and I probably watched it like 4 times in a month because I just kept showing my friends. I was like, we got to watch this. And he's kind of blown up. What's your experience with Shane Gillis? Because now he's... Chappelle's the biggest stand-up comedian in the world. I think like Segura and Kreischer are up there too, but he's like almost at that level right now as far as stand-ups are concerned. I mean, he hosted SNL. Like the people that host SNL, you have to be enormous to do that. But when did you get introduced to him?
I think it was around the YouTube special time, and I think I saw a lot of clips of that just because every bit in that is just dynamic and kind of legendary.
Mm-hmm.
One that comes to mind, like the guy that came up with the Special Olympics. Everybody's like, that was a crazy fucking guy to come up with that idea. You know, it took some balls. He's like, but we race these fucks.
Yeah.
Like some of his bits from the first special just really, I mean, the Too Good and I. And kind of the SNL stuff kind of bolstered him with the attention, especially for the demographic that he's looking for, you know, the demographic that listens to him. That doesn't bother them that he got canceled from SNL. But he's back, a real full circle moment. And I thought he did a great job, brought some entertainment to SNL because it's been fucking bone dry.
Yeah. So I want to start with his monologue, because there was a lot of reception or conversation about the reception of the monologue, you know, people not laughing, all that kind of stuff. And I think that the audience was actually pretty good with it. They knew what they were getting themselves into. So the first thing is that when you watch somebody doing a monologue, the only person that you see is them, right? And typically the person has it written for them by the cast. And the other people that you see are the band members in the background. There's one guy in particular that always stands out to me. He's kind of an older gentleman now. He's been there for a long time. He has gray, curly hair. And he didn't laugh once during the monologue.
He did. No, he got him in the second half. Go back. He got Quest at
okay,
the end.
Okay, but it was like a resistant kind of thing. And my point to this is that...
The beginning was a little rough, I feel like, for Shane. It took him a minute to kind of get in. And then he just went back to the tried and true.
Sure.
Stuff that he knew worked.
But the thing that bothers me about this is that, you know, that person that's in the background, the band member, he always laughs like he's like forcing laughter out when it's somebody who's not like Sydney Sweeney is going to be hosting Saturday Night. Not as funny as Shane Gillis. Like not even close. Like
up.
We know what she's there for. We know why she's going to be on the show. Not for her comedy. Okay. Yeah. We both would. Right. But like, he's going to be laughing his ass off because the cast is going to write her monologue. She will not have written it. Shane goes up there and he does a stand-up bit, and it's his own material that he's been working on, that he's cultivated for this moment. Right. So I guess like, we love Shane, and he popped onto the scene so much because so much of comedy is, you know, somebody said something that they shouldn't, right? Like when you were a kid, when you were in elementary school, a thing that made you laugh was a class clown that was doing outlandish shit. And that's what Shane Gillis is. And we haven't had anybody like that, not just in comedy, but in like comedy movies for the longest time. Like really since the Judd Apatow days with like Seth Rogen, James Franco, Danny McBride, Craig Robinson, or even like The Hangover, people like that. We haven't had that in so long. So I'm not just like a fan of Shane and his comedy. I'm a fan of everything that he stands for. That comedy is outrageous and it is inappropriate and it's going to make you feel a little bit uncomfortable. So he just got a Netflix series that he's been working on since like 2019 or 2018. They just bought it. I'm hoping that he gets even another step further into this and starts making comedy movies. And we get back into the theater. We have R-rated comedies again, which have been literally zero to none the last like 10 years. I mean, I can count all of them on one. It's like No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence or whatever that movie was called. And what's the one with like the little kids, Good Boys, something like that. Like that's literally about it as far as R-rated comedies. And then Anyone But You with Sydney Sweeney. But like, do you feel like, does that make sense to you? Like this level of like, this just doesn't exist anymore?
It's rare that somebody comes along and like everything they do can kind of be funny. Like, you got it with the SNL cast of the 80s and 90s with like Sandler, Farley. Those guys just came on screen and Eddie they Murphy, laugh and you
Chris
laugh.
Rock.
Like, yeah, like they're laughing at their own jokes. It gets you going. And the thing about Gillis is he's not like a punchline guy. Right. He's more of just like your stupid friend that's going to make you laugh with every single thing he says, you know. And like he's just, he's great. Definitely one of my favorite comics out there, especially just kind of relatable, you know, everybody just feels like a loser sometimes, and he can relate to that. The skits that he did were great. Some of my favorites, the Forrest Gump one. He's like, Forrest, that fucking loser, what's he been up to? Everybody's so like, good. Dude, you haven't heard of Forrest Gump? He's like, I did coke with Danny DeVito one night. Like, he brought some of the best SNL skits from probably the past 5 years, because I haven't seen... we'll see this week if Sydney Sweeney, I bet there's some good Sydney Sweeney ones. They could play off some of her, talents.
So I'm an avid SNL watcher. I watch it literally every week. I might not watch it Saturday night,
really?
But I watch
the recording.
Yeah.
This is something new. I didn't know this about you.
I've always been an SNL person. So there are a few cast members that I really like, but then there are a few cast members where I'm like, and this is going to sound bad, but, I think that they're there for making the cast a little bit more diverse. There's a couple of people.
Give me your favorite and your least favorite.
My favorite is Michael Longfellow. I think that he is hysterical. He's not as active on it.
He's the one that plays Biden, right? Is that him?
No, that's
I'm not going to know any of these
Mikey
names.
Day.
So you're gonna...
Mikey Day plays Biden. Okay. I also like a newer kid named Marthello. That is this is his second year, but my least favorite, it's not that he's my least favorite. Like he seems like
a
good guy. Like,
I know you meant the race thing, but you got to give me the race because that's like the only way.
So Michael Longfellow is a white dude. Like he's just like a guy that I've seen do stand up here in Des Moines. He's hysterical. And I think that he's a little bit edgier of a comic. But my least favorite is a black dude. I think this is his second year. I can't remember his name off the top of my head because every time he's in a skit, like, I understand if the host is reading the cue cards, but he's always clearly reading the cue cards, and he just seems, like, very robotic, and it's just, like, there's nothing memorable about his performances, and that's not me being racist or anything. Like, I love Bowen Yang. I think he's hilarious. I like the black woman, Punky Johnson. I love, Ego Wodum. I think she's great. She's been a mainstay.
Black people are arguably funnier.
100%.
Like it should be easier for... to get a laugh out of you, you know?
But there's also, like, no reason that Keenan should still be on that show. Like, it's been a while now.
Yeah, Che should be gone. Like, I love Che's HBO show. And like,
I don't know. I really like Weekend Update. Like, that's my favorite part of the show. I will sometimes skip to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's always my thing. And then, we actually have a Weekend Update with Bordy tonight. So that'll be fun, too. Maybe we'll call it a Friday update. But, all right, we should move into Justin Fields, who has hot rumors about going to Hotlanta to play with the Atlanta Falcons.
They need to take these rumors off the stove and, you know.
It's nice.
Get this
Raheem Morris,
it's
new head coach. They got a black head coach now, former defensive coordinator of the Rams. They have Bijan Robinson. They have Kyle Pitts. They have Drake London. We know about the talent on that offense. NFC South is kind of the first thing that came into my mind when this popped up. Fields goes to the Falcons today. It happens. What are the odds for the Falcons to win that division, and how much money are we putting on those odds?
I mean, Buccaneers played good ball this year.
Sure.
Obviously, Mike Evans is a question mark coming back.
Baker.
You got New Orleans. I'm not sure if they're going to roll Derek Carr out there again. And you got, who am I missing?
Bryce Young.
At Carolina, that's obviously a non-threat. But, yeah, I mean, if you can get Fields in there, and I'm not sure if Raheem Morris is going to be calling the offense. He's a defensive guy, right?
Defensive coordinator, yep.
Yeah, so I'm not sure who they brought in to call the plays. But, yeah, I mean, I would definitely take Fields in that offense. I mean, you're obviously not competing for a Super Bowl yet, but you could sell some few more tickets and some jerseys, you know.
And why not take a flyer on the guy? I don't know
where they're picking, but, yeah.
Yes.
Because it's a one-year thing, and the Bears want at least a second is what is said. I mean, there's been mumblings of a first. That's not going to happen. I highly doubt a second gets sent their way, but maybe next year. But, you know, take a flyer on them. And I thought a team should do this last year. I thought Pittsburgh should have done it instead of drafting Pickett. Yep. I thought, you know, a few teams just are like, no, we don't want a quarterback. And I think that's partly they know they're not good enough to compete, so they want a better pick. So there's just a lot that goes into it. But I said Fields to the Falcons last year because it makes sense. Still makes sense, and that's why he's the favorite.
New offensive coordinator in Atlanta is Zach Robinson, the former passing game coordinator with the Rams. So they stole not one, but two members of that Rams team from their coaching staff. So that's exciting. That's a guy who's another part of the McVay tree and the Shanahan tree.
How does McVay and Shanahan just reload so fast? Do they have guys just in the program just that are already studs? Just
I actually always wonder about that. Like, why isn't there a formal university for coaches? Yes, 100%.
So that helps them a lot. I think they're just – it's a hot job, so all the actual good coordinators go there, you know. Son of Mike Shanahan. McVay is obviously a great coach.
Yep.
I think it's just one of the best assistant jobs in the league.
Yeah. Well, so I'm thinking about this from Justin's perspective. You know, he's coming from – a Bears offense that had zero offensive line, except for this year was a little bit better, but the first two seasons that he was there, it was just an atrocity. Like, everybody knew it. Like, if you looked at their Madden roster, it was like 68 overall across the board on that offensive line. This year was a little bit better, but their run game is, that's really where the offensive line succeeds there than anything else. Atlanta, on the other hand, they have, you know, just a better protection for him. I don't know if he's going to have a receiver as talented as DJ Moore. I think that that relationship really blossomed this past year, and it was so fun to watch. But I just keep thinking about how dynamic a read option would be between him and Bijan. Like, there is no right answer there for a defense. It's like either do you think he's the best rushing quarterback in the league, or would you rather have Lamar running the ball?
I mean, probably Lamar with the ball in his hands. I mean, Fields is obviously built more to run it. You know, he can absorb tackles, but I just got faith in Lamar to run when it's the right scenario now. Fields, when he runs, I think it's a cause of bad decisions, kind of. Like, he doesn't get to his read, not getting through him fast enough, so he bails, which, granted, he did do a better job with it this year. But yeah, he fresh start in Atlanta. I think he's from Georgia, so
yep,
he's not there yet. So there could be Pittsburgh. Tomlin could swoop in here like a fucking thief in the night, you know.
And like, I know that like nobody ever talks about them, but I think this is like, I don't know why the Giants wouldn't make a bid on it. Like, Dable did so much with Josh Allen that
Daniel Jones, $40 million man.
Hashtag Duke in the NFL.
He's never beat the Cowboys. You give a guy $40 million, he's never beat your biggest rival.
I mean, they aren't going to have Saquon most likely, so I guess they could put Fields at running back. They just put him back there.
Yeah, let's do a little Saquon bit. Who could use his talents?
There's Texans. A few receivers out there too. I am dreaming and drooling about him behind C.J. Stroud. I think that would just be
why wouldn't you if you're Houston? You know, you got capital, you got money.
Damian Pierce wasn't very good last year. Devin Singletary is just, you know, an average back. You know, you get a superstar like that in that building, and then, you know, take some of the pressure off of Nico Collins, who I think might be like one of the 15 best receivers in the league. Also takes a lot of – it just builds on the play action too. Like, you have to put another guy in the box sometimes on like third and two. Just gives you way more options for Stroud. Helps your defense.
Because that's how they want to win games. So that's how you complement your defense, is a good run game.
I keep thinking about this idea that that division, the NFC South, is just so winnable.
AFC South. And
NFC South. I'm still thinking about Fields. Like, oh, I just can't.
Going back to Atlanta.
Yeah, because I just want, like, I think the odds if he goes there, I mean, he's a better quarterback
than
Ritter.
Atlanta was a game away from winning it with Ritter.
Right, exactly. So, like, and Tampa Bay had not a dream season by any means, but, like, they definitely weren't dominant by any stretch of the imagination. So, I don't know. I really like that fit there. I think it would be a lot of fun. But we should move into – do you want to do LeBron or Wemby first? Which number one overall pick that is separated by 20 years, literally two decades, do you want to talk about first?
We got to start with the old man.
Okay.
Start with Grandpa Dick.
So I'm watching that game, and Grandpa Dick is just, you know, they can be so frustrating because, like, you can see the effort when they know they're on a nationally televised game like that early in the game. And then a lack of concentration just breaks through. And I think it starts with Bron most of the time. And then Norman Powell hits this three at the end of the third quarter, and everything seems like it's lost. I'm like, should I turn this game off? Then out of nowhere, he just starts stringing together these threes. And the fact that he's still capable of this, like, we can talk about year 21 and all that bullshit, but, like, it is amazing, man. Like, it really is. Like, I always use this this example. He's 39 years old. Go back to your childhood and think about what your dad was doing when he was 39 years old. Probably picking his ass, you know, shooting like on an 8-foot hoop with you because you weren't tall enough to get it to the fucking rim. And your dad probably didn't even shoot 60% on that fucking rim. Okay. And LeBron's out here just
700 pounds
getting stops against Kawhi, like down the stretch. You know, leading the team, and I don't know, man. Like, he just said this week that, or not, he didn't say it, but Brian Windhorst came out and said that he's going to be looking for a 9-figure deal if he declines his player option this summer with the Lakers. Let's say you're a GM of the Thunder, right? You have all of this cap space. You have all of this young talent. What prevents you from being like, all right, Bron, you got it, man. We'll give you 3 years. $50 million a year.
OKC would have to give LeBron $1 million or $1 billion, maybe $1 trillion for him to
move. And is that because they're in Oklahoma City?
Yes. You'd have to build him a new city. His house is bigger than that fucking town. Like, he's in LA. If he's going anywhere, I bet it's Golden State, Sacramento, or I don't think he's leaving LA.
He's not going to Sacramento.
To go there. You know, Bronny's going to school there. He's got two other young kids. I mean, Sacramento's got a good team. He'd be fucking sick in Sacramento.
Good branding opportunity, too. The King and on the Kings. Like, the King on the Kings is a great branding opportunity. The first team that he ever played against in his NBA career.
He had, like, 25 and, like, 6-6. Black and purple LeBrons would go crazy.
They would go nuts.
And he could build an organization for Sacramento like he did in Cleveland a little bit.
I don't hate that.
Definitely don't want him on the Clippers. Did you see those new Clippers jerseys?
Oh my God. What is up with that logo? What is the logo?
At an ice cream shop.
Is it a compass? I couldn't tell what it was.
I didn't see that, but the new font is just like the old font, but just worse.
I mean, like the new logo is like, I can't tell what it is. It looks like Wingdings. I'll pull it up. It's fucking... it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, like, look at it. It's fucking revolting. LA Clippers, new logo. Yeah, this is god-awful, man.
I mean, like, Steve Ballmer is just a crazy man.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. Here. Well, what is that?
Yeah, that's what's in the middle. Is that like a cicada?
I don't know. It looks like there's like a basketball a little bit, but it's also like, is that a compass? I think it's a compass.
It looks a little satanic.
It kind of like there's definitely a C right there. This is a bad podcast.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, no.
You could clip
I don't know, man.
The
He's
picture in for a video, but
yeah, and this will be on YouTube. But fuck, he keeps doing it. Do you think they have any chance at winning the title this year? Like any chance?
Yeah, they could get in the playoffs. They could beat anybody in a 7-game series when AD gets off his ass.
He's been off his ass. He's having a great year. It's just like.
It's just like, when is it gonna, when does the house of cards fall?
Because right.
I don't know. I think LeBron has mentored him a lot and helped him, obviously, because he was not a champion previous coming to LA. And it even took him a little bit in LA to grow into it. But yes, he's another one. Some nights he has it, some nights he doesn't, you know? And that's one gripe I have with the NBA is there's too many games and it's a little easier not to care about it. But I know they care, and LeBron, absolute stud. As long as he's on the team, they got a chance.
I think this is actually the best time of the year to get back into the NBA right now.
Oh, I think D'Lo is such a bad fit on that team, though. I think D'Lo is just not it with that team.
He's been pretty good the last couple months. This might be a bad take by you because he's been nice.
Playoff D'Lo is just so hit or miss, though, and he's just going to keep putting it up. And it's just like it feels like all the momentum just goes down when he pulls some ignorant shit.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Can't disagree with you there. But I would say that if you are hesitant to get back in on the NBA, well, I guess not a lot of people are going to want to do it because if they're going to spend time watching basketball, it'll be college basketball since conference tournaments are coming up and then March Madness comes after that. But if you're lonely on a Thursday night, turn on TNT because those teams are competing right now. Like the Rockets-Thunder game the other night was fucking awesome. Like there are just some games, like the Spurs and Thunder are playing right now. I'm sad I'm not watching it because it's Wemby versus Chet. But like, where else are you going to see those matchups at? I've also just been watching the Mavs with like Luka and Kyrie, and that duo is just so fucking nice. Yeah. Like, oh my god, they're so fun to watch. But we should talk about Wemby because he's easily the rookie of the year now. I rest my Chet case. It was really fun for a few months, but the shit that this guy is doing, like. It's not an argument anymore if he's going to win Rookie of the Year. The argument now is he going to win Defensive Player of the Year, which is...
He's not even in the running, though. Like, I got a few slips there, and, like, he's still, like, plus 10,000, like, over those odds. But he definitely is the Defensive Player of the Year. He's averaging more blocks per game than Gobert ever has. Had a triple-double of blocks this year. And he's just out there playing around, dude. He's fucking 19.
Mm-hmm.
And he's toying with people. Did you see? He hit like a tween, behind the back, step back,
or Kyle Anderson.
Three off one leg. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was like a minute after, like literally like 60 seconds in real time, not even game time, where he's going up the court. He does a wraparound behind his back and throws it off of the backboard to himself. And then does it. Like he's doing shit right now that like, all right, so like I coach, little kids, and if I'm like fucking around and I have to like sub coach the first graders, and they're literally in first grade, like 6-year-old kids, like that's the kind of shit that I do when we play on like a 7-foot hoop. Like I literally just fuck around. I'm just like, I'll get up and down with you guys, little conditioning, and like they're
that
like,
guy should have been
like,
a globetrotter,
dude. They look up at me, they're like, oh my god, like you're amazing. And that's what like Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards are doing to like Wemby. They're looking at him like, dude, you're from another fucking planet. Like it's insane. Do you think that's like a free agency case? Like, hey, you can come play with this guy and watch the shit that he does every night. Like, you don't have to just watch it on a TV. You can sit on the bench or be on the court with him while he does this shit. Like, if I'm a free agent and I'm like, let's say I'm not LeBron, I'm not Harden or Paul George, but I'm like the next tier.
Like him and Kyrie.
Like, Kyrie, I don't think he leaves Luka because, like, if you're already with Luka, you're not going to leave a guy who does that shit every night. But, like, let's say you're...
I thought we were trying just to saying, think of, like, hypothetical wet dream here. Like, best player with Wemby. Like... Chris Paul with Wemby, or
oh my god,
just
well
because the
people
Spurs
are talking
can
about...
not the Spurs can just not toss the guy a lob.
No, they can't. And people are talking about them drafting Rob Dillingham, this kid from Kentucky, who like gets like Tyrese Maxey and Emmanuel Quickley comps because he's a guard from Kentucky that's really quick. That kid is a chucker. Like, you think Wemby doesn't get the ball now? Put Rob Dillingham on that fucking team. He is going to throw it up, dude.
Literally just need to get the best passers in the world.
Yeah, they need to go get like a Monte Morris or a Tyus Jones. Just like a pure point guard that's not looking to score, that's trying to get guys involved. Like,
why don't they? They got the fucking craziest player in the world. But no, they just tried out fucking Jimmy and fucking Jerry.
Halliburton. Halliburton would have so much fucking fun with that. Look at the lobs that he throws to like Miles Turner, who's like a good athlete for like a 7-footer. But imagine like, oh my God. See, like, this is why we need people to try in the All-Star game. Like, I just need to see Wemby and Halliburton next year just going all the fuck out for 48 minutes. It'd be so fun.
Wemby in the dunk contest.
But that's just, there's no point. I think we talked
about this already. Like, how
we did. That totally defeats the purpose. All right, let's actually move into, okay, so I am now an hour away. When people are hearing this, I'll have already seen it. But let's just build some excitement for the listeners. So everybody's seen the Dune Part 2 trailers. I'm going to do kind of like a quick, if you haven't watched the movie, like Part 1 recently, then I'll catch everybody up because I've watched it 3 times in the last month because I'm psychotic. But you tell me about your excitement level because you're not, like, you're into movies, but like, you know, I'm psychotic. So I need to understand like a normal person, a Bordy's viewpoint, a 24-year-old dude on Dune Part 2.
Here's my problem.
Start with the problem. Okay.
Yeah, we're starting with the problem, and it's not Dune's fault. It's not the movie industry's fault. It's subtitles' fault. Okay. I can't watch a movie without subtitles.
Okay, and I have rebuttal for this. No, I have rebuttal.
I really
for this.
Need theaters
right
to add them.
No, no, no. Like, I have rebuttal right away.
Oh, go ahead.
Denis Villeneuve. Just hear me out. Denis Villeneuve, the director of this movie, said this week to a publication that dialogue, not that it's useless or meaningless, but he's like, I could care less about it. He's like, dialogue is for TV shows and for the theater. But when I watch a movie, this is Denis Villeneuve saying this, the man who directed Dune Part 1, Arrival, Sicario,
it sounds like
Prisoners, just like Blade Runner 2049. He's directed some fucking bangers. He's one of the best working directors right now. Might be the best working director right now, potentially. Anyways, what he said was that like when I went to the movies, I never remembered a line from the movie. I remembered how it made me feel based on the images on the screen and the sound in the theater. Okay. And when I saw Part 1, granted, I didn't have like a lot of context for it because it was one of the only movies that I saw during COVID. It came out in October of 2021. So COVID wasn't done by any means, but this was like kind of like the re-entry back into the theater for a lot of people. And I remember sitting there and thinking to myself, like halfway through the movie, I'm like, good mother of God, this is one of the best moments of my life because it is so boring. It is so fucking loud in that theater. You cannot take Jada to see this movie. It is like your seat is literally shaking. It's like being on a fucking roller coaster ride. And Part 1 has like a few sick action sequences. Apparently that this sequel to the movie, I mean, it's going to be a lot more than that. It's going to be a fucking wild ride. Like, I'm seeing it at 10:30 tonight. I probably won't fall asleep till like 3 a.m. because I'm going to have the chills rolling down my spine like the entire time afterwards. I'm so fucking fired up. So yeah, that's my rebuttal for your subtitles.
You're going to be reading film synopses till like 6 in the morning.
Don't even need it. I'll just keep replaying shit in my head. Because like my mom was saying this earlier. She was like, she's kind of in the same wavelength. She's like, all right. Like I was explaining like the plot to her and stuff. She's like, I don't really care about all that. Would I like it if I just like want to see something cool? I was like, yes, exactly. Like, if you want to dive deep on this shit and go into the geopolitics of Arrakis, like we can do that. But you could also just go to the movie and
Arrakis
watch it like
has
a fucking,
the dust, right?
The spice.
And everybody's
exactly. That's
the
planet. But like, you could just go and watch it, just be a numbskull, be baked out of your mind, and just be like, holy fuck, that's sick. Like, that's what. So it plays two sides of the coin. You can dive deep on it, like get the lore, get the nerdiness out. But you can also just, you know, be a fucking idiot and just torch that shit. All right, but I think that we should move into more of like a recap for Dune Part 1 because I get it. Not everybody has 2.5 hours to burn rewatching Part 1. Let's just go with what you do remember from the movie. Just like it can be Timothée Chalamet's in it and it was pretty dark.
Zendaya's in it. I remember the spice. We already talked about the spice.
But we didn't go into the spice. Like, what the spice? Because I think the spice is the most fascinating part of this that separates Dune from like Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter.
The spice.
So, all right, let's do this. I was trying to explain I'll this talk movie about how to. It
reminds me of that South Park episode. I didn't know you were starting.
No, you're good. I was trying to explain this movie to one of our coaches. He's, you know, like 45-year-old dude. And all love him to death, right? And I'm explaining spice to him. This is how you explain spice, okay? It is the number one form of currency in their world. And essentially what it is it's their acid and mushrooms and LSD, all that stuff, but it's also their oil and gas. So it's like combine those two completely separate entities on planet Earth, one that people do at festivals to make themselves feel good, and then oil and gas, which people literally go to war for. Combine those two things into one, okay? Now, what it does for the people on Arrakis is that it gives them like this ability to see the future and see where things are going. It's kind of like the pill in Limitless that Bradley Cooper takes. That's how I've been thinking about it, at least. That could be totally wrong, but as far as I understand, it gives you this ability, and that's why people want it so bad. Okay. And the sandworms on planet Dune are actually the ones that create it. So that's why those are so important, those worms.
Sandworms.
So there's Timothée Chalamet on one side of the coin, and he is House Atreides. Okay. Oscar Isaac, Josh Brolin, Jason Momoa. They're all on one team. Okay.
They're hooded folks.
No, that's House Harkonnen.
They dress in charcoal black.
Everybody dresses in charcoal black in this movie. The whole movie. And I think that's beautiful. I'm like, this is just a Denis Villeneuve movie.
It's like Kanye directed it.
House Atreides. The reason that Paul Atreides, Timothée Chalamet's character, he's essentially the Messiah. He's like the Jesus in the Bible for this. Like, that's what Frank Herbert, who wrote the novel in 1965, based it off of, essentially. The reason he's so powerful is because his dad, Oscar Isaac, is Leo Atreides, and he's like the king of their house, right? It's been passed down through bloodlines, kind of like Bordenero's Pizzeria is for you. But his mother is one of the Bene Gesserit. I believe that's the way that you pronounce it. Bene Gesserit. And they are the witches of this universe that essentially are the master puppeteers that pull the strings of everything behind the scenes. And they're the ones that can use the voice. And the voice is the power that they can use to make people do what they do not want to. So they can be like, silence. And they will shut the fuck up and will like zip their mouth shut and they can't speak again until the Bene Gesserit decides that they can. Now, the reason that Timothée Chalamet is so powerful is because his dad is in this political seat of power and he's learned how to lead from him, but he also has the powers of the Bene Gesserit. Now, the thing about the Bene Gesserit, Bordy, these witches, only women can be them. Don't know if you know this. I know he's sexy. Timothée Chalamet is a man, all right? And any man that learns the power of the Bene Gesserit is supposed to go literally clinically insane and like fucking kill everybody, okay? And so his mother, who's not supposed to teach him this, has been teaching him this his entire life. So that's why he's so powerful. All right. Do you have any questions? You're the voice of the audience right now.
I got nothing but questions right now.
Okay. like I said, like you can go in and you can watch this movie.
Isn't Daya just like a poor little like desert girl? Just like a peasant.
Yes. Okay. So she is a member of the Fremen. Now, the Fremen are the people that actually live on Arrakis. And they have like, this is the best way to explain the Fremen. You know how Las Vegas has like the normal world on the top, but then like, there's those tunnels underground and there's people that live down there? That's the Fremen. Yes. The tunnel people. The Fremen are the tunnel people of Arrakis. They're the Vegas tunnel people. Zendaya is a
fucking hot tunnel person.
Yes, that's exactly what she is, Bordy. And now the thing about Timmy and his character, Paul Atreides, is that he has these dreams, right? He has these dreams.
Yeah, he just sees her.
And he sees other things. He sees like people dying, and that ends up coming true in the movie in part one. But he also sees her. And like that's the one thing that he remembers. So when he finally sees her.
That's what I remember from the movie. That's like, that felt like the whole movie.
I mean, it is. It really, like, the whole part of part one is to lead him to her. And then they finally meet, like, towards the end of part one. And then he becomes one with the Fremen because his house, Atreides, gets fucking blown up by the Harkonnen. And the only people that survive are really him and his mother, Rebecca Ferguson's character, Lady Jessica, and she is the Bene Gesserit. Okay, so now where part two is going to pick up, and it's picking up literally right where part one left off, from my understanding, is her and him going with the Fremen through Arrakis. And I don't know where it's going to go from there. I know that Austin Butler is going to come in, and he's going to be one of the Harkonnens. Now, the Harkonnens are just the evil people. Like, if you remember, I love them. They're like my favorite evil people ever. They're so sick. Like, do you remember the big slug guy that, like, levitates? And he goes, "My Dune." Like, I just love him. He's actually a Skarsgård. He's Skarsgård's dad, so that's fun. He's in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Stellan Skarsgård. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I just nerded out for a little bit, but I'm so fucking fired up for this movie, Igor, because I'm seeing it in an hour.
Happy for you. Hope you have a good time. Get you a big bucket of popcorn, Diet Coke, maybe some Skittles gummies.
Should I get the Dune bucket?
I've heard about the Dune bucket.
You haven't seen the Dune bucket?
I know. I've seen it. I've heard about it. I've heard whispers. I didn't think it was real, honestly. It literally just looks like a pocket pussy, right? Is a pocket pussy at the bottom of the popcorn bucket?
It looks like a pocket pussy with teeth. Like, because it's the worst idea ever for a popcorn bucket. Like, think about when you're going into a popcorn bucket. When you get it, the popcorn is like overflowed to the top. It's like the easiest access in the world. But the bucket is like you have to go through a tunnel of teeth to get to the popcorn. And like when you pull it out, like you're pulling out popcorn, you have to like fist it if you want to get it out of there.
It's like
right? But if you have like a loose hand, it's just going to, the teeth are going to get it, pull it back down.
It's like a Japanese finger trap.
That's exactly what it is. It's so stupid. It's the dumbest concept I've ever seen in the world. But all right, you have
just stare at the guy until he gives you the regular bucket.
Well, so like the theater that I'm going to doesn't even have the bucket, so I couldn't get it if I wanted it. I'd have to go to an AMC theater. but AMC also just announced actually that they're releasing more Nicole Kidman ads, like the "Danger Feels Good" and a safe like place like this ads. Like they're coming out with more of those, which I'm really excited for. So I'll have to get to an AMC soon to see those. But you have a bit that you want to do here. It's kind of like our weekend update. It's a bawdy minute, you know, talking about things that are happening on Fox News, which you watch so religiously. So go ahead.
I watch CNN almost more because it's, you know, it's more entertaining.
Almost more, but not quite. You watch Fox News just a little bit more.
No, I stick to Channel 13. I like local, you know, I like knowing what's going on around me as well. Not all propaganda, you know, I like to sprinkle in my propaganda, some local news. But yeah, Bordy's minute. Not sure if Viv's gonna keep this in, but hearing it, let's roll.
This is your audition for stand-up. This is your audition for SNL, since we're looping it back to the beginning.
No, I don't have the cojones for stand-up. I think I'd just go up there and freeze. But after years of controversy, Hunter Biden admits Joe Biden is the big guy mentioned in business dealings. Guess we know who the little guy is.
What? Who's the little guy?
Hunter is obviously the little guy. If you haven't seen his dong in the leaks, you're going to get that one. Most of these are going to be, you got to be in a little group called QAnon to get. But yeah, Trump and Biden visited the border today. They both must be in the market for a new gardener.
Okay. All right, so yeah, I'm going to have to cut this. Okay, got it.
No, that one's great. Got a few more. Trump ordered to pay over $450 million in New York City fraud case. How much is Zach Wilson on the hook for?
Okay, that is a good one.
All right, we got some wildfires. Wildfires have swept the state of Texas. Texas can't catch a break. What's next, migrants? That's
the delivery on that one was money.
That's the rough draft of the Bordy's minute. We'll see you guys next week. Hope you enjoyed that, and it might be a one-time thing.
Three racist jokes and one Zach Wilson joke.
I might be getting a mouthful from Viv in the post-called text thread, but you had to get a few jokes off. Something like that. I've been working like 12-hour days, so I had a few brewing.
Yeah, you need to get your head out of the oven at some point, because that was just that was hot. All right, I don't have a whole lot else before we get out of here. I would like to say that you know, all right, let's actually do this really quick, because I've been having this conversation a lot, because you know, people in like my work, and my mom was even asking me about it today, kind of. They know I'm a basketball coach, so they know I think about basketball all the time. And I wanted
They're
to
like,
say this.
When are you going to get a girlfriend, Viv?
No, they don't say that. Well, yeah, they do, but like, I'm like, shut the fuck up. Yeah, you worry about yourself. I'm chilling. I think it is so fascinating that we have reached a point in our lives, and we don't have to talk about the fact that we know her, but the fact that the most famous college basketball player by a significant margin is a girl. It's a woman. It's Caitlin Clark, right? And I think that is so interesting. And today,
God is a woman.
We were watching.
That was just made up until she came along. God is a woman.
So like,
and she's about
today,
to pass
I,
Pistol fucking Pete. She's about to pass Pistol Pete.
And that's unbelievable. But like, I wanted to talk about like, all right. So today at 10 a.m., I decided to take off a little bit of work and go watch girls play basketball. Obviously, I know the girls, so I'm a little bit biased.
That's my
but,
work. That's my job.
Like, that is not something that I would have done
girls games this week.
15 years ago. Like, I just wouldn't have done that ever, because I think that the gap, and this is the point that I'm trying to make, the gap between girls and boys basketball, specifically from a skill set standpoint, is thinner than ever. Now, guys are always going to have the leg up athletically. It's just like genetics. Like, I'm sorry. Like, we're always going to be a little bit faster, a little bit stronger, able to jump higher, able to do cool dunks. All of that bullshit. But as far as skills are concerned, like the girls that I watched today, like shout out Julia, shout out Jenica, shout out Ari, shout out Daya. They could, like, they're freshmen and sophomore playing on varsity and they're dominating. Like, they're so fucking good. They've won a national championship 3 years in a row in AAU together. Like, they are legit elite basketball players. If they played against freshmen and sophomore boys, which I've also coached, Bordy, I'm telling you right now, they would fucking dominate them. The girls would, if it's those four going against any four 15 or 16 year old boys that we have coached, I think that they win. If they play best of seven series, I think the series is 4-1. And that just, that never existed when we were going, like when we were in high school, like unless it was Caitlin, right? But like there wasn't four Caitlins, and none of them are as good as Caitlin. I'm not putting that pressure on them, but like the margin of like difference between the skills right now is literally, it's never been this close. And I think that's fascinating. I think that's so good for the game.
And yeah, that's what comes with it. You know, in 10 years, there might be 100 Caitlins coming out of college. The WNBA might have more than 12 teams because of her. We just don't know the impact that this could have right now. And obviously I was a little upset earlier when I found out she was leaving. And yep. I made some rude remarks about the WNBA because, you know, obviously it's an easy target and people like to beat up on it. But at the end of the day, it's a failing league and they need to be able to compensate the players. Their star player literally just went to Russian jail because they have to play overseas to earn more money. Like, Brittany Griner was a phenom in college. She was a star, you know. She had not money coming in college, but she had endorsements coming her way and goes to the WNBA, and you don't hear from her until, obviously, the situation in Russia. But sad to see Caitlin go. Hopefully she can put the WNBA on her back. I know she's definitely going to probably quadruple the ticket sales in Indiana. I bet whoever sells the pizza there was pretty excited today. I was saying the other day in the chat, like, we got the Iowa Wolves here at the arena. Like, them not letting Garza play is, like, really fucking money up. Because, like, when Garza plays, we literally do five times business. But
that's crazy.
The Timberwolves are just, like, keeping him on the roster, like, bench guy. And I'm like,
doesn't play literally ever.
Yeah, no, doesn't play a lick, but we got a big banner of him on the side of the building. Yeah. 250 feet tall.
Wendell Moore has moving tickets like that?
No, Wendell Moore, he moved in the starting point guard role because DJ Carden got signed by the Raptors. This was originally going to be a bit. Some people do call me G League Boardy, because I am so tapped into the G. But yeah, Iowa Wolves got a squad. It's definitely one of the best years that we've had. Wendell Moore.
Stop. We can't do this. No more G League talk. No, everybody just checked out.
Is there any other hoops you want to talk? I want to do a little hoops.
Yeah, just like on the Caitlin thing, like I think that what she's going to be for the WNBA, and this is obviously a projection, is she's going to be what Steph has been for the NBA. You know, the NBA has always been popular. The NBA
had a brand. Like,
yeah, but hear me out. It's not for the brand for the adults. It's not for us. What it is, it's for little kids. Like these little girls, I have it at, when I coach. We have, you know, the young girls down all the way to the second grade girls. I never saw a girl wear a t-shirt jersey or a jersey last year at all. Even Caitlin won. This year, you can't come to one of my practices without seeing at least 7 to 8 of these little girls in Caitlin Clark t-shirt jerseys. Literally every single one. It's insane, right? They're not going to stop wearing those t-shirt jerseys and buying those t-shirt jerseys when she goes to the WNBA. At least that's what I think. I think they're going to follow her there because this is the kind of, like, she has a fandom and almost like a cult that's devoted to her now that is going to worship her. Like, she's, I mean, maybe not even Steph. Maybe she's LeBron. Maybe, like, she just goes to that league and, like, the value of the NBA has gone up since LeBron has been in it. Like, it's that simple. Like, it's just become a more valuable TV product.
They needed LeBron. I don't know.
I mean, where they, you know, there's conversations like on First Take about LeBron every day because he drives that much conversation. Like, would you be that shocked if 5 years from now, Stephen A. Smith is like calling Caitlin Clark overrated because she hasn't gotten the job done yet in the W
and hasn't won a chip? That. Like, that's one thing I'm scared of is if because the Fever are getting the first pick, obviously, so they must suck.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the worst WNBA team, I mean, you're barely fielding any ladies, but no, I'm proud of her. You know, I don't know if I'll be making any trips to Indiana. I was trying to get tickets to this weekend's game against third-ranked Ohio State.
Yep.
And the cheapest general admission ticket going for about $400.
Jesus.
That's more than, like, Duke UNC. You get into that game for cheaper than a Caitlin Clark game in the middle of February at Carver.
You know, they might have the best team on the Indiana Fever, but they got a couple of baddies on here.
They got Belia Boston, don't they? Because I think they had the first pick last year.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so that'll be nasty, her and Elia. I mean, she's just going to get better. She's gotten better every level because her teammates have gotten better. Like,
yep.
I went to almost all of her high school games, and, like, credit to a few of the girls on the team. They had a few other good players, but
yep.
The rest of the girls kind of catch her passes. They were going
back see them coming. Yeah,
and they got better at Iowa. Obviously, you got some decent shooters around her, but they're not the best shooters, you know, like you're going to have in the Dub. Can we start calling it the Dub? It needs a cool name because I've been calling it
the W for a while. I want the hoodie. Dub. The orange hoodie goes hard. Like, I need to get that at some point.
Yeah,
the
Kobe one. Yeah.
Yeah, that thing's fire.
Yeah, shout out Kobe. Shout out Caitlin. Shout out all the homies on the Pop Off Pod. Shout out all the homies not on the pod. Just show love, you know.
Just showing love, Bordy. It's February, love it. Right. You know. It's Dune
it's
Day.
Month of love.
That's what it all boils down to. It all comes back to the spice. And I'm so excited to spice my life up. I hope you go see it this weekend, and we'll have like a fuller review of it on the pod.
Oh, I guess you did give me a valid reason for no subtitles, but
that was a good argument too. I was quick with that one.
Yeah, you had that one on deck. I don't know if it did enough for me because I'm a watch a movie at home guy. I like being able to.
This is not a movie that you can see at home, Bordy. It's not a movie you can see at home. It's not the same experience. You want to see my fucking
80-inch TV I got over here?
It's not big enough. Like, I'm telling you right now, it's not big enough. It's not a movie theater screen. If it's not a movie, like, you're not going to get me to go against the movie theater. It's just not going to happen.
I know.
The movie theater is a different experience.
That's why we're perfect together, you know? We're peanut butter and banana.
Let me see your speakers.
They're not set up right now, but they're currently right across from me. I just moved into my new place.
Yeah, then you definitely need to see it in a fucking theater. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Bordy and I will be back Monday talking about Dune Part 2. We'll have Petey and Cerrone with us. We'll do a draft. Don't know what the draft is yet, but we'll have it. But happy March to everybody. I think it's Mental Health Awareness Month, if I'm correct. Happy Leap Day to people that are listening to this on Thursday
take it
night,
easy.
Which will be everybody nobody.
Take it easy. Happy March.
Happy March. Spring is upon us.
March 1st. Icy season.
Dune Day is here.
You know I'm going to be acting up.
Dune.
You know I'm going to be acting up.
So we love you. We will see you guys on the other side. Peace out.